This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, where we talk about the biggest stories from across Texas. Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Headline. I am Brandon Waltons, managing editor here at Texas Scorecard on this cold Friday, and I'm joined by Michael Quinn Sullivan, our publisher here.
I literally live like three blocks from the studio. It's the only reason you have me here.
Look, we're here, rain or shine. You know, that's the
rain,
thing. We're
going to
be here.
Ice and UFO invasion.
We've got a few stories to talk about. Believe it or not, other things have happened other than just the fact that it was really, really cold across Texas.
The good
this
news
week.
Is like supposed to be like up to 60 on Tuesday.
Yeah, it'll be nice, and it should be sunny this weekend.
The weather with Brandon and Michael.
Yeah, it should be sunny this weekend.
Don't trust us for your weather report.
But you know, leading into this, there were a lot of questions about whether or not this storm could have been worse, and if so, would it potentially put the electric grid in Texas to the test?
Yeah. And, you know, look, Matt, I think that, you know, certainly you saw like Beto O'Rourke kind of cheerleading for death and mayhem, which, of course, is kind of what the Democrats have to offer is death and mayhem. But I think that the good news, of course, is that temperatures weren't as bad as some had thought, certainly not as sustained as we saw last year. So the good news is, while there were kind of some spotty outages, folks didn't have the, you know, week like my family, no electricity last year, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I think what we still don't know, Brandon, is, you know, is the, you know, have the problems that existed that gave us the 2021 situation, had they really been fixed? Or, you know, was Mother Nature kind?
Yeah.
We skated past.
Well, I think you saw a little bit of concern there from the governor as well. Governor Greg Abbott, of course, doing some periodic press conferences before and through the storm. But, you know, really singing a different tune than he did even a few months ago when he was interviewed and said that the lights would absolutely stay on. You saw just right before the storm, he sort of hedged on that a little bit. Take a look at this clip here and see the comparison.
Governor Abbott doubled down on his confidence in the grid.
Can you give a guarantee that the lights are going to stay on?
I can guarantee the lights will stay on.
Well, listen, no one can guarantee that there won't be a, quote, load shed event.
So you go, Brandon, from, you know, the lights will be on to, well, no one can actually guarantee that. And, you know, I don't think I've ever seen a candidate for office criticize themselves for their own lack of campaign promise follow through or something. A little weird to see that happen. Again, on the other hand, the good news is, you know, things didn't really go bad. So
it seems like not the kind of promise you would ever really want to make. Because
many things outside of
there's always going to be some level of this, right? Trees fall on power lines, or there's ice buildup and things like that. So certainly an odd promise for him to make. But glad to see that for the most part, Texas got state did have power. But that's despite the fact that the legislature, look, they did a number of items trying to weatherize, winterize the electric grid, protect the electric grid, really hasn't been put to the test yet whether or not those actions were sufficient. But the one item they really didn't take action on was going after some of these unreliable energy sources, things like wind, things like solar. The only thing they really did sort of almost inadvertently was end the subsidies for those programs.
Well, yeah, and I think you said it right, Brandon. They didn't end the subsidies, the so-called Chapter 313 program, where a lot of the wind and solar farms get their big taxpayer subsidies out of. They didn't, you know, to say they ended it kind of implies they took a proactive action to do the right thing. Instead, because of mismanagement and laziness and whatever else, they just kind of stumbled into not renewing Chapter 313. So it's going to expire at the end of this year. And you know, I think a lot of us saw that as kind of one of those, just like the, you know, the football player who gets turned around and gets confused and runs the wrong way, but ends up still scoring a touchdown. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, good, we got a touchdown. That was not a good play.
Yeah.
And that was kind of this, you know, what happened with 313. But you immediately saw, you know, a lot of folks like State Senator Brian Birdwell from Granbury, mm-hmm. Republican from Granbury, you know, during the session, oh, we need to save 313. And you saw other Republicans saying that. Then after it died, there was kind of went quiet. But now you've got Speaker Dade Phelan saying, oh, we're going to go back to corporate welfare.
Yes. And just to as a bit of background, Chapter 313, okay, this refers to this program where essentially local school districts are able to offer these large tax breaks for 10 years to renewable energy and other businesses. But then they don't actually really lose that property tax revenue. The state actually subsidizes it. So it's actually a taxpayer-funded thing, kind of in a roundabout way. Taxpayers end up footing the bill for these things. It's done under the auspice of job creation, but the critics, I think, rightfully note, how many jobs does a windmill, right, create, right?
Or a solar farm. A lot of times you have these big solar panels, big windmills. You've seen them on the highways. They're made in other places. They come in. They drive them across the state. They install them and walk away.
And not
a lot of job creation there.
And despite the fact that both the Republican Party platform as well as the Democrat Party platform in Texas have both at times called for the ending of these programs, House Speaker Dade Phelan said this week at an event put on by the Texas Oil and Gas Association in San Antonio, said that the program could be resurrected. He actually said, and this is his quote here, that the legislature would be developing a program to replace Chapter 313, a crucial incentive program to attract businesses to Texas. And, you know, again, how many times do Republicans and Democrats agree on anything these days? And yet you still see the leader of the Texas House and implicitly, if he's speaking for the Texas House, going against the will of the voters in both parties.
Well, this is a good reminder that Republican and Democrat taxpayers, Republicans and Democrats who have real jobs up in the real world, mm-hmm. are all united against taxpayer-funded corporate welfare schemes. Republicans and Democrats serving in the Texas legislature, Republicans and Democrats serving in public office, on the other hand, are all united in favor of corporate welfare, because the lobbyists always get rich off of these things. And so those lobbyists pad the pockets of House speakers and freshman state reps and state senators, mm-hmm. and governors and lieutenant governors and everyone else. And so as a result, the corporate welfare programs, despite near unanimity mm-hmm. among taxpayers, those taxpayer-funded lobbying or those corporate welfare schemes continue, mm-hmm. and it is just a reminder that the two real parties, mm-hmm. are the elected class and the rest of us, the Austin sewer culture and the rest of us. Those are the two parties in Texas.
Wow, and there's even some disagreements among the elected class themselves, and we saw some of that this week. If you haven't caught them yet, Texas Scorecard is rolling out our series of uncut interviews with candidates for statewide office. We started on Thursday with our interviews with all three candidates running for the Republican nomination for Agriculture Commissioner. And there was a really noteworthy clip. I encourage you to see all of the interviews, but there was a really noteworthy moment where incumbent Agriculture Commissioner Sid Miller said that in his nearly 8 years now of being in office, being the Agriculture Commissioner, has never had a phone call returned by Governor Greg Abbott, never had a meeting. He compared him to saying it's like working with Sasquatch, saying everybody knows he's real. Check out this clip. Do you and the governor speak often at this point?
It's odd you say that. I've tried numerous times to get a meeting with the governor in the 7 years that we've both been in this office, mm-hmm. our offices. Never got a meeting with the governor. Never got a phone call returned. Never got an email or letter returned. Hmm. Politico asked me, interviewed me and said, what's it like working with Governor Abbott? I said, well, it's kind of like working with Sasquatch. Everybody knows he's real, and there's some people have seen him, mm-hmm. but I've never seen him. I can't get a meeting with him. I, I wish I had a good answer why mm-hmm. he doesn't communicate. Mm-hmm. It would make life a lot easier.
I was going to say, would that make the job easier?
I think so. If we were all working together instead of separately and independently. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm not a hard guy to get along with, but if you won't talk to me, it makes it hard to work with you.
Mm-hmm. And Michael, you know, because we've spoken off the record with some other statewide officials, that this is not localized to just Sid Miller.
Yeah. When Sid Miller first started making a little bit of noise about that, I thought, surely this is just because Sid Miller grabbed the last, bacon-wrapped quail at some fundraiser they were both at, and Greg Abbott's held it against him, for, 198 years or whatever. But instead, talking, again, off the record, mm-hmm. background, with quite a few statewide officials, senior committee chairs in the legislature, all of whom say they can't get Greg Abbott on the phone, that even the governor's staff doesn't return their phone mm-hmm. calls. There's this very definite sense to which the governor of Texas just doesn't see the need mm-hmm. to communicate with other statewide officials, senior legislative officials, and that's troubling, and I have not yet been sure what exactly to make of that. Mm-hmm. There's been a sense from a number of folks that there is a strain within kind of the establishment Republican Party that they would like to change the Texas Constitution to get us away from having all of these statewide elected officials, because ultimately, Sid Miller, the Commissioner of Agriculture, mm-hmm. doesn't work for the governor. The Lieutenant Governor doesn't work for the governor. The Attorney General, the Land Commissioner, Gwendoline, all of these positions that we vote for, they're on equal footing with mm-hmm. the governor, constitutionally, practically. There's this strain that says, we need to develop an appointment system mm-hmm. similar to the federal system, where the governor can come in and kind of appoint an executive staff at executive level folks. And I don't know if this plays into that mm-hmm. or if it's just simply Greg Abbott just doesn't personally like talking to folks. I don't know what it is. But it probably doesn't serve the taxpayers very well.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of last year during the winter storm, where we sent out some open records requests and discovered that the governor had not really been talking to any of the fellow statewide officials during right. that event either. Very, very insulated. But speaking of icy weather, there are some icy tensions potentially down in Montgomery County. Where you have...
I was really wondering where you were going with that.
We're working on the segues.
The segue is great, yeah. It's kind of chilly in Montgomery County.
You got a case where one candidate...
Or it's heating
might,
up, one or the other.
One candidate might be giving his endorsee the cold shoulder. You have a case. We're at a congressional forum in District 8. This is a newly kind of drawn congressional district this time that's part of Montgomery County. Number of candidates for that. Morgan Luttrell, who is one of the candidates there, has been endorsed by Dan Crenshaw, was endorsed by him several months back. It certainly has been known to be aligned with Dan Crenshaw.
Both former Navy SEALs.
Yes. But you had a case where the forum host asked the candidates there to name, quote, a House member that voted for legislation that provided for a federal vaccine database. Just name one. Well, Luttrell named Dan Crenshaw, sort of calling him out and saying that he wouldn't support something like that, which, I think leads to the question of why are we seeing potentially some distancing here?
Well, I mean, Dan Crenshaw is moving into Montgomery County because mm-hmm. redistricting. Montgomery County is split between a couple different congressional districts, which one, you and I were talking earlier, that it's kind of rubbed a lot of folks in Montgomery County wrong. They're the largest or second largest, depending on how you do the math, mm-hmm. Republican county in the state. Big population, very solidly Republican and very conservative Republican county. And they kind of feel like, they should be, rather than the table scraps that, help boost up the numbers yeah. for multiple candidates, they should have their own member of Congress from there, kind of like, you know, and so as a result, they're already a little frustrated, and now they get saddled with a guy who they don't like, and Dan Crenshaw, and it's kind of come to a head since the filing deadline, where Dan Crenshaw speaking in Montgomery County and was asked some questions about some statements he'd made on a podcast a year or two ago by a young lady, teenager. And Dan Crenshaw just kind of tore into her, really rubbed her the wrong way. He didn't have thick, here he is, this big Navy SEAL, but doesn't have thick enough skin to answer questions from a teenage girl. That was a little weird. And now you've got this situation where Morgan Luttrell is distancing himself from Dan Crenshaw, maybe indicating that Luttrell has a better sense of where Montgomery County is than Dan Crenshaw does, particularly when you consider that, like you noted, Crenshaw made the endorsement of Luttrell sometime back in the fall, and yet you can't find any mention of that endorsement on Morgan Luttrell's website. You know, typically, candidates, if they can get somebody who was once a dog catcher to endorse, they'll put it on their website. And yet, here he is, a sitting congressman, not mentioned. And that says something about maybe, we mentioned this in the Texas Minute today and this morning. Someone emailed and said it's maybe not so much that Dan Crenshaw is becoming toxic, it's that maybe his mask is coming off. And there's something to that. I think Dan Crenshaw is not the rock-ribbed conservative that folks maybe assumed he was. And I'm not even sure Dan Crenshaw ever presented himself as the rock-ribbed conservative. He presented himself as Team Republican, which isn't always the same thing
right.
when you're looking at Washington, D.C.
Right, absolutely. And we'll be following that very, very closely, see if that impacts it potentially, as we've got early voting starting just around the corner on the 14th.
And of course, Crenshaw doesn't have, he's got several opponents, none of whom are very well funded. Luttrell, on the other hand, is in an open seat with a lot of folks running, many of whom are talking about this issue of Dan Crenshaw.
Yes,
in a different district.
So we'll be following that, and seeing if there's any updates there in the weeks to come. I want to mention, if you're interested in joining the team here at Texas Scorecard, we are hiring. There are opportunities here at Texas Scorecard. And I actually sat down with our development director, Elizabeth McClung, to talk about just one of those earlier this week. Check this out. Elizabeth McClung, you are the development director here at Texas Scorecard. And right now you've got an opportunity. You're looking for a new development associate. Tell people a little bit about what that entails.
So the title development associate might be a little confusing if you're not familiar with development in a nonprofit context. So essentially, it's fundraising, but it's so much more than just that one word entails. In the development department here at Texas Scorecard, we have the opportunity to connect God's resources with our mission. And essentially what that means is we give people a chance to invest in our mission, to stand alongside us with their financial support so that we can advance self-governance through honest and purpose-driven journalism.
What is your favorite part about working in development?
My favorite part about working in development, hands down, has got to be the thank you calls. And I know that sounds really weird, but essentially anytime somebody gives us a gift, whether that gift is $5 or $500, we call them up and say thank you. No gift is too small, no gift is too big, and that is a representation of somebody's hard-earned money, and we want to be good stewards of that money so we can put that money to good use to advance our mission. And in making thank you calls, I get the chance, and everybody else on the team who helps with thank you calls, we get the chance to get to know our supporters, the other people who are standing alongside of us in this fight for liberty and for honest journalism. And so it's a joy talking to like-minded people on the phone.
Well, and that work certainly doesn't go unappreciated. Thank you, Elizabeth. And if this sounds like an opportunity you're interested in, you can go to texasscorecard.com/opportunities to apply to be our next development associate. Again, if this is an opportunity you're interested in, or to check out the other openings here at Texas Scorecard, go to texasscorecard.com/opportunities to learn all about it. Well, thank you so much again for joining us on this episode of The Headline. Hope everybody's staying warm and has a great weekend. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Headline. You can watch the premiere of The Headline on our website at 5:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. If you like today's production, please consider subscribing and leaving a review on whatever podcasting platform you listen on.